Thank you everyone for being here today for our Commissioner's Court. As we always do, do we have someone here today who would volunteer to say our opening prayer? District Attorney Brett Ligon, if you'd come to the mic, please. Also, would you lead us in the pledges when we're done with the prayer?
Sure. I'm Catholic. I will do my best. But if you would, please bow your head.
Please bow your head. Graciously, Heavenly Father, we come before you today in all our purposes to make sure that we proclaim your goodness, your greatness, and all the things that we do within our life. But we also ask you, Lord, that you look over each and every person in here today that's going to make decisions that affect our community and affect our county. We ask that you keep our thoughts pure, that the words that come out of our mouth be the, make sure that they're truthful, and that the things that we hear, that we discern with reason and with logic. Lord, we ask that you look over all of our first responders. We ask that you look over men and women serving in the military here and abroad. Lord, we ask that you lay your healing grace over the nation in all things. And we look forward to your birth and the season of Thanksgiving and the season of Christmas. In all things, we pray your name in Jesus. Amen.
Amen. Pledges?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible. Thank you for that opportunity.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Brett. All right, let the record reflect that all of our commissioners are present. Do I have a motion to approve the Commissioner's Court agenda?
Say that again, I'm sorry.
Do I have a motion to approve the Commissioner's Court agenda?
Yes, I move.
For a second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. At this time, we allow for citizens to come forward and make comments. We do this twice in the court. We do it during this time and also at the end. The reason we do it at this time is for citizens to make comments on items that are either on the consent agenda or are on our open agenda. Because if there is other items, and those, because those things are noticed. At the end, we will allow you to come forward. We have a section where you'll be able to come forward and express your opinions. We ask that you limit it to 3 minutes, and if you have anything that you want to hand to us on the dais, that you get permission to move forward to approach the bench. So is there anyone here who has any comments they would like to make about any items that are on the consent or open agenda? All right. If there are none, then let's move forward. Do we have a motion to approve the minutes from our last session?
Move. Second.
All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. All right. Are there any modifications that we would like to make to our consent agenda?
Move on consent.
Second.
Okay, have discussion. Is there any discussion? Because what I would like to do is to move item G in its entirety, A, B, and C, to our open agenda. And Commissioner Nowak, I appreciate you putting it on it and with your, all of our desires to move forward, but I have some questions that I need to ask in relationship to that. Are there any other modifications?
9D, 3D on page 3.
Was it, you say 9?
Got that. Yeah, 9D, 3D on page 3. The Haggerty contract.
Okay. 93D. If you just give me a moment. 90. All right. Are there any other modifications that we'd like to make to the agenda? If there are none, then do I have a motion to approve the agenda with modifications?
I move.
Is there a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Let's get the second first. Did somebody second that?
I'll second it.
Okay. All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, let's move forward then. On our consent agenda, you, Commissioner, on the, if, as we move to the open, let's move right to our open agenda here. As we consider and discuss in its discretion, take action on the following items. The first, concerning the item G1A, B, and C, which has to do with the Woodlands Township, I have questions, and as I think about that, there are some legal questions associated with this, and so, and when we, I'd like to move those to our executive session so we can ask the questions, some legal aspects to it before we make decisions on that.
Hey, Todd.
All right. Item, and then 9D, and nine, what was it, James? 9D and 3D, Commissioner?
Yes, 9D, 3D. And really, it's just, what are the changes to this contract? It's about 100 pages. I printed it, looked through it. It was hard to identify what the exact changes were. And for the not to exceed amount of $634,208, I just thought that's a big number to be on consent.
Jason, if you could share with us, if we need Gilbert to be involved as well. It's your call.
Good morning, Judge Commissioners. This item has to do with the 2017 HUD buyout grants. It's for infrastructure and buyouts as it relates to Hurricane Harvey. And the amendment here is amendment number 9 with Hagerty. It's as HUD changes the components to this contract with us, we have to amend our contract with our professional services that help us with identifying these properties and going through the process of qualifying that property for a buyout. The grant pays for that dollar amount as part of the administrative cost of the grant, but Hagerty is our professional service vendor that assists us with identifying the property, qualifying the property, ensuring they meet the program terms, and then assisting us through the purchase and transition of that property from buying it to green space.
And so it's budget neutral is what you're saying, basically.
So the county budget, it is. It's not budget neutral to the grant
how
itself.
How much is the increase, and what exactly is the increase for? Because it wasn't clear.
So I'd have to specifically pull the documents and read through them. I know we just passed this exact same thing last week with Hagerty for the 2019 FMA buyouts. So as those terms of those agreements change and federal government changes how we have to follow different program rules for that, we have to amend those contracts to
so
fulfill
could you
those.
Do that while we're in executive session?
Sure.
So you could give us the full details? That'd be
yep,
great.
Absolutely.
So I'd like to defer that until at least after executive session.
Easy deal. Okay. Then let's move forward. Concerning our budget, Amanda, come and share with us what we've got going on with the budget.
Good morning, Judge. Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
I do have two budget items this morning. The first one being consider and approve the FY 2022 budget policy. This incorporates all of the discussion points that we had at last Commissioner's Court. I did provide the backup. The backup did change just a little bit due to the county attorney's office reviewed it, so we added some commas and grammatical changes. As they liked. If you guys have any questions, we can go over the policy. I do have a copy of the policy here if there's specific points that you guys want to talk about.
I like the big changes.
Yeah, sure.
That'd be great.
Yeah, so the big changes, of course, is being related to a vacancy savings. A vacancy savings is two parts that made a big change. One being that law enforcement departments are able to use their vacancy savings. We've asked them to wait, though, on a quarterly basis to use those. That gives us a little bit of time to make sure that they haven't overspent in 1 month or overtime hasn't gone through the roof. So that's for the law enforcement departments.
And it is specific to they can only use it for personnel? Not. That's what we discussed.
That's what it should be.
It needs to be clear that it's not for asset purchases. It's only for personnel.
Okay.
The way it is the sheriff's department.
Yeah. That's what we agreed to.
And the other piece of it is that for regular departments, those benefits related to FICA and retirement would be used to go into the self-insurance fund. So those are the major change in the vacancy savings. Carryover procedures, we did set a carryover date, so that's in the policy, so that date is now passed. And so you will see So my next item has incorporates part one of those requests. We'll have the rest of the analysis done by the next Commissioner's Court, which is next week, so that we can go through those. Those are pretty much the other ones. Account name changes since we went to Infor. Some of those have changed. We have taken on vehicle maintenance as a budget office budgetary item, so we kind of monitor and maintain that based on the asset list and kind of the trend spending. We started that about 2 years ago, but we put it into place this year where we're actually pretty set on that budget. Any other questions that you guys have? Those are pretty much the highlights, Commissioner.
I'll move with the exception or the addition that it's clarified in the policy that law enforcement offices can use dollars from their vacancy savings only for personnel-related issues.
I second that.
Okay.
Is there any discussion on that? Commissioner, I agree with what you're saying there on that, is because it is not delineated here as I'm looking through the paperwork.
It's not.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Is there any more discussion? If there is none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right. Consider and approve carryovers compiled from various departments.
Yeah, I'd like to go over those with you guys real quick.
Yeah.
We had several departments, a few more than we normally do, that requested their carryover. Almost every law enforcement department requested. The Sheriff's Office analysis is not completed yet, so we will be bringing that back at, like I said, next Commissioner's Court, along with building maintenance, animal services, court operations, contingency, and non-departmental. But the first ones are the DA's office. DA's office requested all of their carryover from their operations, which was $118,535 for their aging vehicle fleet, a large number of trials, training and travel for their employees. So what we did is we basically took an average of what they had spent in the past on their vehicles. We looked at training per employee. We gave them $500 extra per employee. So they did get a 2022 budget. This is on top of their 2022 budget, and they were satisfied with the $93,221.
And if it's okay with the court, I move on the entire
Perfect.
Carryover plan. I looked through it. You spelled it all out. I don't have a
second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Is there any more discussion? If there is none, all in favor?
Uh-huh.
Thanks, Commissioners. Judge.
Motion carries. Thank you. All right. Our District Attorney, Brett Ligon.
I will make this brief at Commissioner Nowak's request. So the in this most recent...
You didn't say short, Brett.
I didn't say short, brief. In the most recent legislative session, they enacted a new law, 351-252, the local government code, which requires the commissioner's court, which is y'all, to create a sexual assault response team. Every county has to do it. When we were doing our legislative update, we cracked the books before the sheriff's department did or Conroe PD did. And so at that point, we realized, hey, it has to be done by December 1st. And so we reached out to Amy Dunham and said, hey, we got to get this in front of the commissioner's court. It's probably something that you were unaware of, probably had very little input in. The sheriff's department, kind of police department, the DA's office, were already prosecuting sexual assault cases. This was laws in direct response to what was going on in Travis County at the time. So, of course, the legislature says, okay, well, if it's good for one county, we'll do it for the whole county. Despite the way that the sexual assault response team comes up, it's still a very, very good vehicle. What the vehicle requires is the court to appoint an initial committee. The committee has to meet quarterly, and the committee is required to establish protocols, training for interdisciplinary training, information for victims of sexual assault. It's supposed to increase the efficacy of the investigations and decrease trauma to sexual assault victims. Incredibly, incredibly important goals, the things that we already deal with, but the SART will hopefully continue on that vein. The work, gentlemen, that we need you to do is just to appoint the initial committee. So in regards to that, instead of y'all just kind of going, hey, we really don't know what to do, I have the benefit of Tiana come up here giving me a briefing on it. And this is work that's already being done by the community. These names aren't going to be unfamiliar to you. But there's some statutorily that have to be appointed to the committee. The chief administrator of a sexual assault program, not a children's assessment center. The prosecutor that handles felony or that handles adult victims of sexual assault, police chief of the largest police department, the sheriff, a sexual assault nurse examiner or representative from the largest health care provider in the county and behavioral health services provider. You'll see several of those are very easy. We know who the sheriff is and his designee. We know who handles adult victims of sexual assault, the district attorney's office. We know who the police chief of the largest police department is, Jeff Christie. I think Chief Christie is going to be on the way and his representative. We also know who handles the sexual assault program. And so the rest of it is a recommendation. You'll see, I think it's on the second page. So what we're asking is that the court take action, review and take action in regards to establishing the SART. I'll let the court read the resolution and order at its discretion, but we're asking that the court appoint Montgomery County Sheriff Rian Henderson and his delegee, which is Jermaine Jenkins. We're asking that the court appoint the Montgomery County Women's Center, its designee Lauren Jones. I know that Debbie Edge is here also from the Women's Center. If y'all would, please stand up. I'm asking that the court appoint me and my designee, Tiana Sanford. We're asking that the court appoint Jeff Christie and his designee, Lieutenant Kellerman. And then Sheriff Henderson would appoint Jermaine Jenkins. Now, that's the easy work. The harder work, and I think there was the concern of the court, which is, man, who do we appoint? Do we appoint a forensic nurse examiner, or do we appoint somebody from the largest health care provider in the community? And I'm going to tell you right now, and I'm not even going to put on my tap shoes, you're not going to go wrong with either or, but I'm going to suggest that you appoint both, right? Because the statute allows you to appoint both. Even though the statute is written as an either or, it gives you the opportunity to appoint both. And my feeling is, why would I not want Texas F&E? Kara Breeding is here. That's the forensic nurse examiners. These are people that are in the trenches doing this work with us every single day. They're meeting with the victims already to make sure that they're not traumatized. We're already working in a multidisciplinary group with Texas F&E. Texas F&E already has a working relationship with which hospital?
Memorial.
Thank you. With Memorial. And that's through Jamie Farrell. A lot of you probably know Jamie if she's here. Jamie has vast experience in developing and presenting education outreach programs for advocacy, law enforcement, health, and judicial to reflect evidence-based practice and the care and evidence preservation for the sexual assault patient that impacts health, investigation, and prosecution. So we're already dealing with these people. These are the ones, the experts in their field, the subject matter experts. I'm asking that the court appoint Texas F&E as well as the hospital district to the SART.
I move on the resolution in order and appointing everybody that you mentioned.
You still have to also do Tri-County. We've got Catherine.
Ask about Tri-County.
Yes, sir. So the reason that Tri-County gets involved is one of the
behavioral health.
Yeah, behavioral health services provider.
And we move as Tri-County as well.
Yeah.
Tri-County, that's why, I know I'm trying to speak as briefly as possible.
I'll second that motion.
But when you're dealing with people that are this good.
Is there any more discussion?
And just shut up. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank all of you for being willing to work on
thank
this.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank
Glad
you all so much.
A big deal, and
awesome.
It's very appreciated.
Chief Christie just walked in the door, too.
Yeah.
Chief Christie, thank you with Conner Police Department, his designee. So we will be meeting probably by December 1st. We're going to have the first one required to submit a report, and that will be done quarterly as well. So thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. All right. And thank you all for being here on behalf of your organizations. We appreciate it. All right, Jason, Emergency Management, give us an update on what's going on in the pandemic situation.
Good morning, Judge and Commissioner. So no action item on this today. I'm just giving you an update. The Angel staffing contract that the court approved a couple months back has now ended on the 31st of October. We had 139 nurses work a total of 66,000 hours approximately during that contract period. It was about just shy of 3 months. So it was started on August the 16th and ran through October 31st. Having been in all the hospitals in the county during that time, the chief officers of the hospitals, of course, and the nursing staff, that work here full-time. We're very grateful for the backup and the assistance they receive from the nurses, and I did not receive a single complaint from any hospital on that staff. They were very happy to have them. And based on when they left, the timing was almost spot on, because as of October 31st, the numbers had declined to a safe area in the hospital where the local staff was having no problem handling that volume of patients. As far as that staff-wise goes, I have not, again, received any complaints from the hospitals. They were all very happy. Monoclonal antibody infusion center is still open. It got extended through November 30th at this time. That's when it's slated to close. It's possible it'll get extended again. It's one of the few centers the state's still running that's actually seen some activity, and that's because we're the regional center for the Houston metro area, so we're still seeing patients through that facility each day. As of last week, we had done just shy of 5,200 infusions at that center since August 16th. And so it's one of the busiest ones in the state, and it has been also a blessing to have, because it's coincided with our decline in hospital rates due to COVID almost at the same time the center opened. So the two of them, between the nurses and the monoclonal antibody infusion center, it made sure that county residents and those that use our hospital were treated well. So that's it for the update.
You maybe mentioned something about this. Tell us, as there, concerning the results of monoclonal, what was the mortality rate of those that did? And
so as far as tracking goes, I can't speak for the state data, but for the county data, I've been told of no instance where anyone that's received that infusion has had to end up going to the hospital. And so that's a really good sign. The folks that come in there, it's almost even 50-50 vaccinated to unvaccinated. It trended a really high 70-30 for a while, unvaccinated to vaccinated, but as time's gone on, we've started seeing more vaccinated folks come in for the infusion. There's been people that are really, really sick, and those that are have so many comorbidities, it's a good thing that they have access to that, so we don't end up in the hospital with that patient. So we've had good success with it, and so far supplies, even though they've been limited, have not been affected, because the state's been able to move things around to the busier centers. So,
what's the story on the booster? That is, whether it's Moderna or whatever.
So the FDA just approved boosters recently. They are a smaller dose than the normal dose. So you do have access to that third booster if you were on Moderna or on Johnson & Johnson. They're both smaller than the original first two doses. Moderna is. Pfizer is not. Pfizer is the same strength for all three. Moderna is a slightly smaller dose than the first two that you would receive. And they've also approved the mixing and matching between Johnson & Johnson and Moderna or Pfizer. So if you had Johnson & Johnson first, and since there is a booster available for it as well, you can get a Pfizer or a Moderna instead of Johnson & Johnson.
When Dr. Sims talked to us, when he was talking about if we get the vaccine, if we had COVID, then we got the vaccination, and then we got the second shot in the vaccination, do we need the booster or the third shot?
So according to Dr. Sims, if you were infected first prior to vaccination, you basically, that was like your first shot. You developed natural immunities and antibodies from that first infection. He says, the science is still out. They're still working on identifying how thick or how heavy those antibodies are built up in your system. But you have some level of immunity there. Receiving the first vaccine, though, would be basically like your second dose for that individual. And receiving your second vaccine would be essentially your third. So if you've gone through natural immunity, natural infection, and two courses of vaccine, you've essentially given yourself the booster. It's not necessary to have a booster at this time. He did suggest that you contact your primary care doctor, at least in consultation with that, but based on his advice, it was not necessary. He also did say in that same briefing that because of the county's infection rate and vaccine rate, that what we can anticipate in the winter months, like we saw last year in December, January, and February, where we saw a surge, he does not anticipate a surge at this time because we have a high level of herd immunity at this time, and that's statewide. That's not just unique to Montgomery County. And he cautioned with that, as long as we don't have another variant that emerges that's vaccine resistant or immunity resistant, that we should continue to see some lower and lower claims as we get through the winter months because of the immunity levels that we're at. So.
All right. Thank you, Jason. Gentlemen, is there any more questions
that
we have?
Yeah, I have a question. I mean, this is about ARPA funds. Is it, does this category, emergency management and the COVID pandemic, is it broad enough to cover a question on appropriate use of ARPA funds or no? Probably not. Okay.
Well, I think we do have an item on executive session.
If it's on executive session, can I ask it in open?
Okay. So, legal question.
Yeah, it is. Well, I know it's not a big, during the past couple of weeks, there was a lot of discussion about a particular overpass being built. Actually, the Woodlands Township Chairman, Gordy Bunch, had made the assertion that Montgomery County could just utilize ARPA funds to build an overpass.
I understand
it's not correct, but I just wanted it to be clarified for the public. So can Montgomery County use ARPA funds to construct an overpass?
Under 16D, which we are now pulling out into open, we're switching topics. I do not believe so.
The provision in ARPA that would allow the county to build a project like that would be based off of lost revenue, and we would convert ARPA funds to recapture county's lost revenue. Montgomery County did not have lost revenue as a result of the pandemic. Therefore, we do not have funds that can be converted for general purpose use for something like that. Okay. So we're restricted to addressing the pandemic with the funds, healthcare expenses, broadband, internet type things, water and sewer projects in LMI type environments. And those are the top.
And we're
of
getting
categories.
Off of yeah. what's been noticed on the agenda. So
was the narrative created that money was spent to build an overpass?
No, that it would be that we could indeed build this over, because there's obviously not funding or plans to build an overpass, but it was part
this
of the narrative.
This is an item you want to bring back?
I just want to make sure
that it is
continue
not
the item in the executive session for what was planned. But
not available. Yeah. Cannot do it.
Mental health also, right?
Mental health, yeah. Well, that's addressing the pandemic and healthcare expenses. But yes, mental health is primo number one on the list of things that you could use ARPA for. So,
all right. Jason, thank you. Are there any other questions, gentlemen? If there are none, let's move on to elections. Susie, welcome.
Good morning.
Morning.
Please consider and approve the order to canvass the returns and declare the results of the November 2nd.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? If there is none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Thank you, Susie. We're going to recess Montgomery County Commissioners Court and convene public hearings.
Would you like me to do these, Judge?
Yes, would you?
14A, conduct public hearing and receive public comments relating to redistricting of commissioners' precincts. This is coming out of our special session. And is anybody here to talk about redistricting? Redistricting the commissioners' precincts. Is anybody here to talk about it?
Okay.
Redrawing the lines.
Okay, proceed then.
Okay. Under 14B, consider and approve naming an unnamed road, South Williams Cutoff Road, and accept it into Montgomery County Road Maintenance System by prescriptive right. Is anybody here to speak about that?
All right, if there is none, then let's reconvene court.
So we have an item under 15A, but before we get there, under 14B1, we need to see if there's a motion to approve a resolution in order accepting and naming the road that was discussed in 14B1.
So moved. Is there a second?
Yeah.
All in favor?
Opposed?
Motion carries. All right. As we move forward in 15A, consider and discuss take appropriate action on adopting a final plan that redistricts and establishes new boundaries for the county commissioner's courts. BD, can you come and help us with that, please?
So the county clerk has the actual motion. So what we have is coming out of our session from last week, we need to move one of the precincts or voting boxes from Precinct 4 to Precinct 1.
Yeah.
What you have is a proposed resolution in order doing that.
To recap, those were the two precincts that were out of balance, out of the 10% balance. So it can be solved with moving just a single precinct from Precinct 4 into Precinct 1. The proposal is to move, I believe, it's precinct box number 2, which is in the southeast portion of the city of Conroe and outside, from Precinct 4 into Precinct 1, and all the other precincts stay the same.
I'm good with that.
All right. We're good with that? Then do we have a...
Thank you, Commissioner.
Yes, sir. Then do we have a motion with that in mind to approve the moving forward with our redistricting, establishing the new boundaries for the county commissioner's court?
So the clerk has a resolution in order that has a map, and it has all the demographic exhibits that go with it that reflect that change, moving box 2 from precinct 4 to precinct 1.
Okay. We have a motion to... You have a motion over here, Commissioner Mitt. We have a motion and a second. All right. Is there any more discussion on this? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right. Thank you. At this time, we're going to move to executive session. The court will recess for executive session pursuant to one or more of the following provisions of the Texas Government Code, to wit, Chapter 551, Subchapter D, Articles 551.071, 551.072. If you'll bear with us, we'll be back in a little bit. We appreciate y'all being here. Let's go ahead and move to executive session. Resume court. Come back from executive session. There are some action on matters that need to be taken. As we begin, we ask our county attorney, Amy.
Sure.
Deputy attorney, if you would walk us through these, and we will vote accordingly.
Okay. So, Judge, you asked that we move to G1, A, B, and C to open. Then we were able to have a legal discussion in an executive session. Coming out of executive session, this is back in open. Is there a motion on G1, A, B, and C?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, continue on.
The next would be, is there a resolution, is there a motion to approve a resolution in order to settle the Johnson & Johnson opioid litigation and authorize Judge Keough to sign any and all documents related to same?
Move.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Next one.
I got caught. Is there a motion regarding the CJIS issues? And for this one, we would need a funding source. And what I would ask is that there a motion to authorize Bobby Powell and, as director of IT, to take appropriate actions with respect to the CJIS audit and to move forward with that. But we would need a funding source.
I move in the funding source is reclassified.
Commissioner, we're going to, a recommendation from staff is to go.
No, go ahead.
Is to go with unused salary dollars in the 2021 budget, carry those over for law enforcement departments, out of law enforcement departments, into the 2022 budget to cover the CJIS.
How much is that going to?
$6 million.
That's the deal.
I like that.
It's not including benefits. It's just
no. What I'm just thinking, the unexpended law, those reclassified law enforcement dollars. That's a. It's all the same in the end. I mean, does the court have a?
What Amanda presented, we hadn't considered, and sounds like a good idea. I mean, that will work, won't it, for us to do that suggestion?
All right.
Take it from that, and it's workable. We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. All right. Let's move forward. Amy, is there anything else? We good to go?
I don't have anything else.
All right.
Then, we have that's on page 3, 9D, 3D.
Oh, yeah. Jason, if you would come and explain that, please.
All right. Judge and commissioners, I had pulled the document, as Commissioner Nowak said, it was over 100 pages, and it included all the original amendments and the original contracts.
So I pulled out what's specific to this amendment here. As you know, the 2017 HUD grant for buyouts and infrastructure projects is about $11.2 million. It was awarded a couple years back. This is for the Porter Heights drainage improvement projects, Tamina drainage project, South Porter drainage project, and countywide buyout project, which includes 24 properties. The specific changes in the is not necessarily changes to what Hagerty was doing. It's bringing Hagerty on board to facilitate that entire project. They're going to be working on their statement of work is going to assist with all administrative duties related to the program development, implementation, and closeout, assist with the development of policies, procedures, and records, oversight, and monitoring compliance with federal agencies, assist in the completion of the required environmental review, advise the county on third-party vendors and procurement and associated tasks, and the list just goes on and on.
It's
so
expanded.
It's project management for the entire thing. It's very similar to what we do with the FMA and everything else. Hagerty's our one-stop shop for all project management related to these types of projects.
Again, their cost is covered by
The $630,000, whatever it was,
covered by the grants
is included in the grant as the administrative. It's actually less than the administrative award because we use them. There's no duplication of work because it's one vendor doing this exact same thing for multiple projects.
So budget neutral.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you.
Very good.
Yep.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Jason.
Absolutely. Appreciate it so much. All right. Let's move forward. We have a number of citizens who are here today that we have the opportunity to hear from them. As you come forward to talk to us, just a couple things. If you'd come up, identify yourself and what the discussion is about. Identify yourself, what you're talking about, and understand we have 3 minutes. If you have anything to hand out to us, please ask permission to approach the bench. So, with that being said, who would like to come first? All right. And if you
good morning, Judge.
Good morning.
Commissioners. My name is James Leviston, and I'm from the Tamina community. And I guess this would be to Commissioner Metz. I come to ask about the Tamina Park. Since the park opened, we had a key in the area where we could have access to the park. As a matter of fact, I've had a key just about ever since it's opened. But they changed the locks at the park, and now we have to go from Tamina to Splendora to get a key. And we have I'm the president of the Water Corporation down in Tamina, and we have our meeting the second Tuesday of every month. And I have to go from Tamina to Splendora to get a key. Is there any kind of way that we could have a key or someone to...
That's real simple, if I could address that, Judge. The lady that was in charge of that farce over there, she, as my understanding, she moved out of the community.
Yes, Ms. Shirley Grimes, she moved up.
Grimes. And so we're in the process of getting that worked out over there.
Okay.
Since it's not a noticed item, can we, as soon as we're done, can you guys get together and, but you got a solution, okay.
Phyllis, can you talk to her, please? She can talk to you right now, sir.
Mr. Levinson, thank you.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
We appreciate it so
much.
Thank you,
Mr. Levinson.
Thank you so much.
All right, who's next? Yes. Hello.
Yes, I would like to just...
And you state your name for the record.
I want to thank you, Judge and Commissioners, and I just want... We're with the...
If you would please state your name
Tammy
for the record.
Tammy McDonald.
Okay, Tammy,
yes.
Thank you.
And we're just with a group of concerned mothers and ladies, and... The thing that upsets us, several of us have gone out to the doctors, to the pharmacists, to the hospitals, to the clinics, and we asked them if they knew, if they had read the VAERS report. And, you know, theirs is vaccine adverse effects. And apparently about only 1% of the doctors are actually even reporting on the VAERS report, because there's an incentive not to. And we need to address if this information is getting in the doctor's hands or not, because if it's not, there's a lot of information they're missing when they're trying to inform and consent with their patients. They are not informed. They are not giving their patients proper information. And it's concerning, you know, that pregnant women are being informed to get the jab when there's serious issues. On the VAERS report, there's huge death numbers. There's huge Guillain-Barré syndrome, paralysis. There's blood clots. There's infertility. There's all these issues that need to be addressed. And since, you know, the whole my body, my choice thing, you know, it needs to be informed choices. And it would be good if we could, you know, help instruct our doctors, maybe have some mandates for the doctors to have information on the VAERS report and to properly report, because some of them are being monetized, incentivized not to report all the facts. That's a very, very dangerous thing for our community, for our people, for our children, for our future generations. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it, Tammy. All right. Is there anyone else who'd like to come forward? Yes. Dr. Gibbs, welcome.
Thank you very much, Commissioners. My name is Dr. Shelley Sekula Gibbs, and I'm here just to speak on the item, Precinct 3. It's Commissioner's NOAC's item, and I believe it was GA. Am I correct? G1A. And I understand that was approved during executive session. Is that correct, sir?
Yes, we just approved.
No, it wasn't approved during.
No, not indirectly. No,
it was approved when we came out of executive.
When you came out of executive session, thank you for that clarification. Just for the purpose of public information, I'm going to read that. It says that was consider and approve termination of the interlocal cooperation agreement between Montgomery County, Texas, and the Woodlands Township for law enforcement services in the event of municipal incorporation. Pursuant to the terms of the agreement, the county must provide 60 days written notice. Well, I want to read from the actual contract that was approved unanimously by this group as well as unanimously by the township board in December of 2020. And the terms of that contract between the two bodies, 4.10, dealing with term and termination, say that the agreement will terminate at the earlier of A, 62 months after incorporation, or B, December 31st, 2029. Notwithstanding the foregoing, the county may terminate the agreement 60 days written notice to the township if, one, there is no election for the township to incorporate as a municipality and set the maximum tax rate for the city held before December 31st, 2024,
right.
Or two, there is no election held before December 31st, 2024, which results in incorporation of the township as a municipality. So the way that I understand this, it would be that this agreement, unanimously supported by your group as well as the township, is in force until December 31st, 2024. So I don't think that it's appropriate for this body to violate the terms of that agreement. And I just want to express that publicly. And there is another clause in this this contract that was signed by you, Judge Keogh, and Gordy Bunch, which basically says that the county will not get involved in incorporation matters. It's recital B on page one. It says the county does not advocate for or against any proposed incorporation and maintains that the decision to incorporate rests with the voters and the constituency of the township. So I just want to read that into the record, gentlemen, and let you know that the township does support the terms of the agreement as it was signed by Judge Keogh and Chairman Bunch and does not think it's appropriate to attempt to terminate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Gibbs. All right. Is there anyone else here who would like to come and make a public comment?
I move we adjourn.
If there is none, then we have, oh, yes, ma'am.
Oh, Judge, I have to go.
No, you got to go. I know. Let the record reflect that Commissioner Nowak has to leave, but we still have our commissioners here. Proceed. If you would name, state your name for the record.
My name is Deborah Ferris. Judge, may I give you all a copy of some, just some reports that I've printed out having to do with COVID, the COVID vaccine?
Yes, you may.
Just read it at your leisure?
Yes.
Thank you.
I actually came here today because I was a little bit out of shape that Governor Abbott signed Senate Bill 8, having to do with government contracts, and anybody who signs a government contract, you know, their employees could be forced to take the vaccine if they wouldn't want to. However, Jason, he kind of clarified some things for us, and he's really smart, and he said he needs a raise. And anyway, I came here to ask that Montgomery County be designated as a sanctuary county and not against the COVID-19 vaccine mandates, because I think that people need to be able to decide if they want to be vaccinated or not. If they choose to, that's fine. But there are a lot of people, myself included, who think the vaccines are detrimental to our health and can lead to long-term bad side effects. I've read little things on, you know, the next door post and whatever. Oh, I had the COVID vaccine and my arm was sore for a couple of days. And they think that's the side effects we're talking about. We're not. In that information that I gave you, you'll see that cancer is on the rise. There are actually people going to the emergency room now with organ failure due to the COVID vaccine. One of these, I guess you've heard that there are children have been suffering heart problems from the vaccine, and actually one of these manufacturers has started adding a drug to counteract a heart event. Why would you give that to your children? And why would you have to take any kind of drug like that for yourself? I believe in vaccine choice. You want to get vaccinated, but people shouldn't lose their jobs and be able to not provide for their families because they don't want to be injected with something that they think is detrimental. That's basically my point. So if Montgomery County could lead the way and say, we're going to be a sanctuary county in this county, you do not have to be vaccinated if you don't want to be, and you will not lose your job if you choose not to. That's basically what I have to say.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate you coming and sharing that, Deborah. All right. Yes, if you would.
Good morning. I think it's still morning, barely. Good morning, Judge and Commissioners. My name is Cindy Phillips, and I'm a resident of Montgomery County. And yesterday, Governor Abbott signed into law SB 8 relating to making supplemental appropriations and giving direction regarding such appropriations. This bill includes the appropriations of federal COVID relief funds to the state of Texas in the form of the American Rescue Plan of 2021. Many Texans are concerned about the contractual agreement, which is 151 pages long, that comes with these funds. This is just a part of it. It is a contract, an actual binding contract, that comes with these funds and how it will affect them and their families. We are aware of Governor Abbott's executive order, GA-39, banning any vaccine mandates by state or private entities in Texas. However, when looking deeper into the terms of compliance from the federal government, the language of these terms is broad, sweeping, and quite alarming. Recipients of SB 8 funds are required to enter into a contract with the U.S. Department of Treasury and must comply with the award terms and conditions as detailed in the interim final rule for the coronavirus state and local fiscal recovery funds. The recipient remains responsible for monitoring and overseeing the sub-recipient's use of the funds and other activities related to the award to ensure that the sub-recipient complies with the federal statutory, regulatory requirements, federal executive orders, policies, procedures, and directives as defined in the award terms and conditions. This begs the question, if such recipient,
all of us, is found to not be compliant with one of the many federal statutes, regulations, or executive orders, will the federal government demand the repayment of all funds received, seize their bank accounts, seize their property, incarcerate the recipient, all of the above? On October 15th of 2021, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton warned all state agencies, here's the letter, of unprecedented federal contract language causing conflicts between state and federal laws. This is very alarming. If Montgomery County can avoid receiving funds from the federal government's American Rescue Plan of 2021, this would be the first line of defense. However, with Governor Abbott's signing of SB 8 yesterday, we feel that the residents of Montgomery County need an extra safeguard against this extreme federal government overreach. Therefore, we are asking that this court would adopt a resolution to make Montgomery County a sanctuary county against COVID-19 vaccine mandates to protect its citizens from an egregious overreach by the federal government. And I did email each one of you this morning full documentation of all of this with a website. And if anybody that's listening, they can go and find all of this information at TexasRightToKnow.com. That's TexasRightToKnow.com. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We appreciate that so much. All right. Is there anyone else who would like to make public comment? All right, if there is not, then do I have a motion to adjourn?
I move.
Second? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you all for coming.